The Planchet is a product of the American Numismatic Society. Become a member and support this podcast. Go to numismatics.org/membership. That is numismatics with an S .org/membership to see options and prices.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Planchet Podcast, the official podcast of the American Numismatic Society. This is Andrew Reinhard, and I am your host and the director of publications. And with me today, after a long hiatus, is Shanna Schmidt. And she owns and operates Shanna Schmidt Numismatics. She is specialized in ancient numismatics with a particular focus placed on Greek coinage. She's a board governor for the American Numismatic Association, or the ANA, since 2019. As well as a fellow of the American Numismatic Society. Yay! So the ANS. Shanna also held a board position with the International Association of Professional Numismatics, the IAPN, and was a full member of Professional Numismatics Guild, or PNG. So welcome, Shanna, to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So I wanted to jump right in with a couple of things. And I noticed from your biography, on the website, that you're actually coming from a communications background formally, and that you're actually worked for the advertising giant Leo Burnett. So how did you find your way there, and then how did you find your way to becoming a coin dealer?
Well, it's a very interesting route. Actually, before communications, since about the age of, I think, 5 or 6, I studied classical piano. And I was a music major. I actually wanted to be a classical pianist. And that, for me, was the only thing I ever dreamed of. And so when I went to university, I actually studied music for 2 years. And then I started to get very nervous about it, about not making a living. And I was trying to figure out what to do. And my dad said to me, which I think is almost really comical, he said, "You're creative. Why don't you go into advertising?" And I'm like, the least creative person I know. I mean, I guess he associated piano with creativity. And I don't think that it is really, it could be creative, but I read music. I don't improvise or anything like that. I'm really classically trained, and I still continue to play. So that's how I ended up in advertising. And then when I was going into my senior year at University of Illinois down in Champaign-Urbana, where I got my degree, I had an internship at Ogilvy & Mather in New York in Hell's Kitchen. And I had this great, media internship unpaid, lived there for a few months. And that kind of like led me down this path of working in communications and working in advertising for about the next 13 years or so. So I've worked with, Leo Burnett and, some other big agencies like, Foot, Cone and Belding, OMD, which is a media company located. I worked in Dusseldorf, Germany for them, and was in Copenhagen as well with Leo Burnett. So yeah, I basically was, really involved in the advertising industry on the media side, and media specifically for me, that meant like working with the TV, radio stations, buying space basically for big advertisers. And that was my life. And it took me kind of all over the place. And I think you asked, how did I end up where I ended up?
With the transition from advertising to numismatics professionally.
So that, I grew up in a numismatic family. My dad is Harlan Burke. Which he's a pretty well-known name in numismatics. And so, I attended my first coin show as an infant. I was underneath the table in my little, baby carrier or whatever. And so I've been around numismatics my whole life. I remember as a little girl meeting people from all over the world. I mean, we come from Joliet, Illinois, which is not, a very sophisticated big city or anything like that. It's famous for Joliet Jake from the Blues Brothers, basically. That when there's a state penitentiary in Joliet. Yeah. That's how I told people where I was from when I was traveling, you know, when I would be living overseas. I would say, people say, where are you from? I would say, Chicago. Well, actually not Chicago. I'm from Joliet. And they would say, where's Joliet? And I said, have you ever seen the Blues Brothers? And then they knew where I was from. So, yeah, so I grew up in this, you know, kind of blue collarish community. And my dad was bringing people around me that were from all over the world because he was buying coins. I mean, he started his business in the 60s. And so I was already from a young age around all this. And of course, I hated it. I thought it was the worst thing ever. I am a girl, remember? So, and if you look around the coin world, and I'm not talking about academia, which can be quite different, obviously, but I'm talking about like actual, you know, coin dealers. There's not a lot of women in the business. And it's not really, I would say that it's making very slow inroads, but it still continues to be very male dominated, which can be a good and a bad thing. But I wasn't really that interested to do it. However, when I was in my early 30s, I was living in Germany. I had just had my second baby. And my mom was trying so hard to get me to come back to the United States. And she called up my dad one day. My parents have been divorced since I'm about five. But they still have a very cordial relationship. Mm-hmm. So she called up my dad and she said, you know, why don't you give Shanna a job, you know, get her back here. And he was like, sure. And I don't think he really thought that much of it. And I think he actually just thought that I'd come back here and I'd eventually land myself in advertising again, because I had stopped because of my son, Leo. And I came back and dragged my husband back with me, who had actually a job, a very well-paid job. My husband's a creative in advertising. We met in advertising, and he was doing great. And I said, you know, I want to go back to the United States. I had two little kids and I wanted to spend more time with my family. So we went back and I started working for my dad, and it was, you know, I didn't really have much of a place there, but I had this real big fascination with history. And I think that, I mean, for academia, I think a lot of the people, especially, you know, some of the listeners of the American Numismatic Society, this podcast, you know, what brings them to coins in the first place is the whole idea of history and the idea of like holding, you know, a piece of history in your hands and being able to learn more about, you know, the world around us. And it's fascinating. And so I was interested in that. And I basically just started to self-teach in the world of numismatics, and particularly ancient numismatics. And over the course of, you know, the several years I worked for my dad, I started working for my dad in 2005, and I left there in 2016. I went to the University of Chicago, and I ended up getting a master's degree. I did it since I was working. I did it part-time, and I did it through the Graham School. So it basically, it's a master's degree in liberal arts, but I tried to focus as much as I could on coins. And I ended up doing my master's thesis on coins in the cultural property debate. So that's my one contribution to academia.edu or whatever the website is. It's like my one paper. It's so embarrassing. Everybody else has tons of papers and I have my thesis up there.
I don't know. But it sounds like you picked the one perfect topic for your trajectory. And, you know, to be informed on the cultural property debate, you know, while also being interested as a scholar in numismatics, and then, you know, ultimately, you know, becoming your own dealer, it's extraordinarily important to understand the ins and outs of how all of that works, and, you know, the various, you know, the thoughts and feelings of people, you know, who are working with this material in various capacities.
Absolutely.
If you're going to do one paper, that's the one.
Yeah, actually, it's has served me well. It's a blessing, and it's also it can be a punishment in a major way to know as much as I know about cultural property now. I remember when I was doing my thesis, I actually I spoke a lot with Uta Vartenberg, your president, and Uta and I are friends, and she gave me, they weren't always wonderful conversations. I mean, they're hard conversations about cultural property. And I know it's an inflammatory topic, but it's really important for me as a dealer to navigate myself around the cultural property restrictions and to abide by them. Because the world that I grew up in, and a lot of people, they really need to understand this, the world that I grew up in is far different from the world that we live in now as far as coins go and selling coins and how we get coins that we sell as dealers, as auction houses. Times have changed, and some people don't necessarily play by the rules, but people like me that want to have a long-term reputable business do play by the rules. And so cultural property is very important. And so I do my best. It's not an easy world, and we won't always agree on many things, and there's fierce debates, but I do the best that I can. And I'm actually a little bit different than a lot of dealers in that I kind of like straddle both sides. I mean, I also do, you know, some dealers, I'm sure they would wince when they hear this, but, you know, I do things like I work with the government on seizure cases. They'll contact me. They want to know what these coins are worth. They're never worth anything, mm-hmm. but I do that. And I'm also talking a lot with Peter Tompa, and I'm involved in discussions with the State Department whenever I can be. And it's possible about, you know, the MOUs, and I mean, that's a whole bag. We could talk for hours.
Yeah. no doubt that we would. It's just, you know, just a fascinating topic. You know, yes. I'm coming out of the archaeological tradition, where, you know, numismatic evidence, you know, to me was a tool, you know, for dating and for context and the like. And it's only when I became involved with the ANS as its publisher that I really realized the full extent of, you know, the value of numismatics for all kinds of things, and, right. and, you know, where the material comes from, and what we publish, and all of that.
It's a fine line. You know, that's the thing. That's what I mean when I say I straddle both worlds, mm-hmm. because, you know, some of my greatest friends are come from the archaeological point of view, and they don't necessarily agree with everything that I'm doing. But I think that there has to be some middle ground, and we're working our way to find that.
Yeah, you know, that's good. I mean, there's definitely, you know, conversations, you know, that we need to have mm-hmm. so that one side understands the other, and that we can certainly, as you say, meet in the middle. You know, with this kind of comprehension, you know, it's a good way forward. And that actually leads me to one of my other questions, which is, you know, in the world of 2022, if someone, you know, has an inkling to start their own numismatic business, you know, how would one go about starting the business, growing the business, finding inventory and things like that? You know, can you speak to that as a dealer, to someone who is just starting out?
Sure. That is a very, very difficult, a difficult thing to do, I would say, in this world. Maybe, you know, 20 some years ago, it was a lot different. I have colleagues of mine that work, they do trade shows, and they do that trade show circuit, and a lot of the material that they're buying will come from, you know, other dealers that it hasn't necessarily been in the auction circuit, or they'll buy it, you know, over the counter, as they say, quote unquote, over the counter at a trade show. And that's the way they get inventory. I get inventory in a very traditional way because, and we can talk about this whenever you want, the biggest part of my business is auction representation, which I can explain to you as well. But because I do so many auctions, I buy like a lot of customers would actually buy. I buy through auctions, and I buy a lot in overseas auctions, and I have them all, you know, imported into the United States legally, go through all the processes that I need to do in order to get them here. To start a business, a numismatic business, and I can tell you from my own experience, because when I started my own business in 2016, I started with nothing. I had no inventory. I did have a small Republican coin collection that I had and I started to sell that because, I mean, and we're talking like literally 30 coins. So there was nothing. So I started very, very small. And what launched me into my path as a coin dealer, honestly, was the auction representation, because what I earned from doing auctions, I didn't, thankfully my husband had a job. And I think that if you didn't have another income to help support the family, then it would be totally different. But we lived off my husband's income, and everything that I earned, I put directly back into buying coins, and I built my inventory. And, you know, over the past close to 7 years now, my inventory, you know, went from, you know, 30 coins to about 400. So I don't have a huge inventory. It's revolving, obviously, you know, I sell stuff and then I'm constantly replacing and buying coins in auctions. I don't think that's the path that a lot of coin dealers are taking. I think that I can only think of two other dealers that you know, position themselves like me as auction representatives, like basically going into an auction and representing, you know, several clients. There's not a lot of people that do what I do. And so I came into having my stock and being able to sell coins a kind of a different route than most people would do. But that's the route that I know. And I don't think that the normal coin dealer does it like that. But for me, it was because I needed to buy stock. And I wasn't necessarily doing tons of trade shows. And so I used the auction representation in order to buy the stock.
Okay. With the type of business that you have, you know, with auction representation and with having smaller inventory, I'm guessing your business is more of a bespoke or customized nature. And I was wondering also, you know, what a typical day might be like, you know, for you, you know, as you're, you know, doing your basic daily tasks. I mean, could describe a little bit what a typical day might be.
Well, a typical day is usually checking, I would say the night before, checking 6bid and making sure that I have all my times correct on when auctions start. I usually do, there's two main auction seasons for live auctions, you know, fall and spring. So like, you know, September, October-ish time period. And then like right now up until end of May, those are when the biggest auctions are happening. And for me, I'm focused mainly on Europe. And when I say Europe, and also, you know, Great Britain. So, you know, we're talking about auctions in London, auctions in different cities in Germany, and auctions in Switzerland, in Zurich, or in Geneva. So those, I'm checking to see when the auctions are. Like this last week, I did two auctions that basically took every morning. I was up about 4 a.m. Because Kunker, they were doing their auctions at 10 a.m. their time. They didn't have the time change yet. So I got up at 4, mm-hmm. and I bid on the phone with Ulrich Kunker in their auctions. And then I also, towards the end of the week, I did the Roma auctions, and that's in London. And that was at a more respectable hour. That was at 7 a.m. Okay. So thank you, Roma. And next week, actually, I will be doing a continuation of Kunker. They have their 365, 366, and 367 catalogs, and they're primarily ancient coins. And they, that will be, you know, most of next week for me. So the typical day is honestly doing mainly bidding on my computer and on my phone. I try to, since I represent a lot of customers in auction, normally I have good relationships with all the auction houses, and they will have me have a person on the phone with me for the entire time, which we're talking a full day. So I try to use, at the beginning when I wasn't smart, I would just use my normal cell phone, and my cell phone bill started to get very expensive. And then I got smart and I started to use WhatsApp. Okay. And so I have my designated person that I talk to, and we do our auctions the entire day. And if there's a break, if I say, well, you know, my next lot's not for another 50 lots, do you want to just call me back? They'll do that. So we do that. And sometimes I have customers that want to actually be live with me when I bid. So I maybe have a customer on my landline, and then I have the auction house on my cell phone, and then I'm watching it just in case something happens and the line gets broken where I can bid online.
I see, I've seen, live broadcasts from like Christie's or Sotheby's, and you always see people with several phones or something.
No, I'm one of those people. That's basically what I do.
And it's a thing. It's real.
Yeah. I mean, I try to explain to people what, because, before we did this podcast, you were like, what is auction representation? I mean, auction representation is exactly what you just said. It's like Christie's or Sotheby's. And it's that person that's sitting in the room that you might think is the one that's buying it for themselves, but they're not. They're buying it for somebody else. And there are a lot of people that proxy for the customers in those auctions. And we get a small percent of whatever the hammer is of that item. And that's how a big way how I've made my living, and a big part of what my days are usually made up of. When I'm not doing auctions, then I'm doing a lot of, remember, I'm a one-woman show, so I don't have anybody working for me, which I'm actually thinking about hiring somebody soon. I'm doing a lot of clerical work. I am the person that goes to FedEx. I'm the person that goes to the post office. I go to the UPS store where I have a box where things are delivered. I'm doing the bookkeeping. I'm working with a bookkeeper, the accountant. That's a lot of time. I'm, invoicing. I'm talking, with the clients. It's a day filled with, doing everything from the what's considered quote unquote the important work to the very minimal work that, you would try to like push off to somebody else if you had, several people working for you. I just don't.
That is a lot. What do you find yourself looking forward to most during the course of the day?
Ooh, actually, right now I have told myself that I need to make time for at least like an hour or two for myself every day. And so I'm playing the piano. I'm I'm going and working out for an hour. I do classes that I really enjoy, workout classes. And then I'm going to sound really nerdy. I'm knitting.
Okay.
If that's what you meant, like, what are you looking forward to? I look forward to those things. I think it's really important, especially during the pandemic. My music was extremely important to me, you know, just a way to kind of break away from it all and be able to, you know, just play. It was great.
When you're playing the piano, who's your go-to composer?
I play a lot of Chopin. I'm working through, I've played, you know, he's got four ballades and I've played all of them. I'm actually working on the last one myself, but, you know, because normally I would work with, I don't really need a teacher anymore for as long as I've, you know, been playing, but I have like kind of an advisor that I was working with before the pandemic, and he wanted to do Zoom lessons with me, and I wasn't really that interested. I just, you know, I kind of thought to myself, okay, I'll just do this on my own. But yeah, Chopin is my favorite. But I like Beethoven, I like Bach. I mean, I'm very classically focused when it comes to music.
Oh, no, absolutely. I completely understand. And you know, in thinking and talking to you about, you know, your work with the piano, your work with various advertising agencies, and your work with numismatics, I mean, all of these are communication devices, you know, ways to elicit emotion, ways to interact with, you know, this kind of, you know, human feeling of connection, you know, with the past, with and with each other. I don't see much difference.
Yeah, I don't either, actually. You know? it's a good point, especially like with music. I mean, you're talking about, you know, composers that lived, you know, a few hundred years ago sometimes. And it's definitely you're working with the past, and it's I mean, the advertising part of it, okay, maybe not so much the past. I'm not sure where to place that.
Yeah, but it's in itself, you know, advertising. Just like if you're looking at a Roman imperial portrait on a coin, for example, that's a way for the emperor to advertise.
Good point.
You know, this is it's all of a piece.
The oldest form of advertising,
isn't it? You know. Getting back to the auction representation for a moment, do you remember your first auction win? You know, do you remember what it was and how you felt, you know, when the hammer came down? It was your win, your victory.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, actually, my first auction was in Zurich in 1996, and a lot of people will probably try to do the math and say, well, wait a second, you weren't in the business then. I had been working, I graduated from U of I. I got recruited by Leo Burnett. I was working for 3 years, and then I had this kind of feeling of I wanted to do something else. I was just anxious. I never, you know, never did any traveling, never took a gap year, didn't do anything like that. And so I quit my job and I moved to London, and I worked at Gray's Antique Market, which is so crazy, in London for like 3 months. And, you know, just helping out a dealer friend of my dad's. And my father said to me one day, you know, I want you to bid in this auction for me, you know, and I didn't know anything. I really was quite the novice. And I went to the NAC auction in Zurich, and I met a very young Arturo Russo, who is, you know, he and his brother Giuliano, they run NAC now, since their father Roberto passed away. And he kind of, you know, he invited me to dinner with his father and some other people, and they were very kind, and I remember that. I don't remember what I bid on, but I remember being there and thinking and being so nervous, and holding my hand up and having a room full of men look at me like, who's that? You know, I mean, because I can't tell you, like, there's really no women unless it's like the wives of, you know, one of the dealers that are sitting in the auction. So that was my first auction, which I'm not sure if you should really count that as my first auction, but that definitely left quite a mark on me. When I started working with my dad in 2005, because I'm a fluent German speaker, it was kind of like, for me, I wanted to get back over to Europe, use my skills. I felt like it would be a very good way to connect with the international community, which I think is very important in the coin business. And so I started doing auctions for my father, you know, representing clients from Harlan Jaberg Limited. And I think probably my first auction going back, at first I would go with my father, and usually it was NAC because that was kind of like the big auction. Everybody had to go to NAC. I would go to other auctions as well, like, you know, Gorney and Mosh or whatever in Munich, but NAC was kind of like the ideal and everybody was going there. So that was my my first auction experience. And it was very, very exciting. I remember just, you know, being completely fascinated with it and getting to bid on the, you know, the most expensive coin I've ever bid on. And one was hammered for over 700,000 Swiss francs.
Oh, my goodness.
What? And it was, and I got applause. It was very cool. I really, it's very unsettling. Because you're working with somebody else's money, but it's extremely exciting.
We'll be right back after a word from the ANS.
The Planchet is a product of the American Numismatic Society. The best way to support this podcast is join as a member. Since 1858, we have cultivated a community of scholars, artists, collectors, and amateur enthusiasts interested in numismatics and the tangible history these objects describe. Go to numismatics.org/membership. That is numismatics with an S .org/membership to see options and prices.
So what's it like, you know, when the hammer comes down and you have won that particular auction lot, what's it like to get on the phone or to send that message to the buyer? You know, what's that like for you? And then what's it like for the person whose money you have carefully spent?
For me, it's usually, I mean, a lot of times if I'm dealing with something of that value, such high value, usually the customer is on the computer with me chatting away on GChat, or they're on the phone with me. Mm-hmm. And so that they can kind of like, you know, navigate whether or not they want to continue bidding, because the bidding might be kind of fierce and they want to have a little bit more control over it and not just say, well, you know, you can bid up to 700,000 and then it's firm, or you can do like a plus one or plus two increment. They want to be part of it. But for the other people that I'm working with, the majority of the people who aren't buying, you know, close to $1 million in USD coins, it's, you know, I have very strict procedures, and I follow their directives. They tell me after I do an entire process with them of figuring out what level we want to be at in order to be successful. If I win the coin for them, then usually it's like at the end of the day, lots of emails are written and telling people what the results are. And, because most people aren't following the auction live, they are waiting for me to kind of tell them. And it's fun. It's fun to tell them. And they're always very excited if they win something.
When you're not working with auctions, you do have your own inventory. And
do you
find yourself, you know, looking for buyers? You're like, oh, I know this person, and this person really likes ancient Greek coins, so, you know, I'm going to reach out to them. Or do they find their way to you? Or is it kind of both? Do you find yourself being like a numismatic matchmaker? To some extent?
I actually try to do that, but you know, it really never works out. I have to be honest. I try to do the route where, you know, people will say, oh, I have a want list and can you look for these coins for me? And it's inevitable that I will find them. But then I've taken those risks where I've bought something like, you know, I'm bidding in an auction for several people and then I'll see something and I'll buy it for myself for stock. And I'll see something and be like, oh yeah, so-and-so wanted this coin. I'll buy it. And then I'll contact the person, and you never can force somebody to buy something. You can just say like, hey, I've got this coin now. I bought this. And it was inevitable that people would say like, oh, I don't really like this on it, or it's not quite what I was looking for. And so we kind of stopped doing that. I mean, I will alert people if I see something in auction that they're looking for. But I'm less inclined now to just buy something in order to make that sale, because it never works out for me. And maybe it does for other people, but for me personally, I've only had, you know, bad experiences with that. Mm. I do try to curate my customers' collections, the different people that I work with. Some of them have very defined views on how they want their collection to be, and they know exactly what they want. And they know exactly, you know, what I need to do to help them. Other people want direction. They're, you know, they want to know, they want my advice to help them curate the best collections that they can get. So I can be very hands-off and I can be very involved. And my services, when I offer somebody auction representation services, it is like from start to finish. So it starts with, you know, research and, you know, navigating through those large catalogs that a lot of coins are being offered, you know, what's worthwhile to bid on, what isn't, what are the current market prices? Like, you don't want to overpay for anything, but you also don't want to be bidding too low. There are certain things that most people that, you know, bid in auctions realize, you know, usually the estimate is not what the coin is going to sell for. It can vary by auction, but you need to have a good understanding of where things will usually end up. And the reality of that needs to be conveyed to the customer. Some people don't want to follow that advice, and they habitually will lose. And usually those are customers that I don't end up working with too long because, you know, my time is also precious. And if somebody is always just, you know, trying to get a steal, then they probably shouldn't work with me because I'm there for people to be successful. And to be successful doesn't always mean to, you know, bid and bid and bid and bid until you win, but you have to be strategic about it. And I try to give that information so that my customers are, they're more knowledgeable when it comes to the auctions. And, I feel like, you know, over the past 6.5 years, I've grown that area. And I feel like that's an area where a lot of people actually need help. So it's really niche and not a lot of people are doing it. You know, usually have people that like my father's business, you know, they have a big coin shop and they sell coins. That's their first and, you know, their primary, the primary thing that they're doing. But for me, mine is a lot about information and understanding how to navigate in the coin world and to get what you want.
Yeah, no, those are valuable lessons to learn. I was going to ask, and I can ask it now, is did you have any advice to people who are new to the hobby as to how to start building their collections when working with dealers such as yourself?
Yeah, the biggest advice I can give is educate yourself first before you buy anything. You know, don't just jump in and buy. You often hear some dealers say buy the book first. I'm kind of an advocate of that as well. I don't think you necessarily need to buy the book, but you need to at least educate yourself on, like, I have very often I'll have people say, oh, I'm just starting out. I want to buy coins. Can you tell me, you know, like, what do you think I should buy? And it's almost like, wow, that's a big question. Do you like Greek? Do you like Roman Republic? What area do you like? And let's talk more about those areas. You know, if let's say you want to kind of go in down the Greek coin route, well, boy, there's lots of areas that you can go into with Greek coins. I mean, there's all the different city states, and it's a lot more complicated than if you decide you just want to collect, you know, the Roman Republican series, or if you want to focus on the imperatorial time period, or, you know, you want to go with, you know, Augustus to the end of the Roman Empire. So, I mean, there's just so many different ways that you can tackle that. But first, you need to know what you want. Unless you're a billionaire and you have all the money at your fingertips, I still think that getting, you know, having a real concrete understanding of what area you wanna focus on is very, very important. So the biggest recommendation I have is to educate yourself first, and that's by figuring out really where you want to, what path you want to go down. Because saying you want to buy ancient coins doesn't really tell me much.
Well, I wanted to thank you very much, Shanna, for taking the time to speak with us today and to speak with me about the dealer side of the business of numismatics, something that I don't know a lot about, but that may be true of a lot of our listeners as well. But yeah, to get a kind of a peek behind the curtain to see how things work, it's been quite enlightening. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to talk this morning.